Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time yoga aficionada.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that avoids conflict as much as it possibly can, although that sometimes becomes an issue when we choose the films that we're going to discuss. We all have genres that we try to avoid. Anyway, conflict is on the docket this week, as we're going to tackle a pair of films that have very little in common, except for the fact that the principles of each find themselves under attack. The first is Warfare, a film co-written and directed by former Navy SEAL Ray Mendoza and veteran director Alex Garland that depicts a mission that Mendoza was a part of in Iraq in 2006. The second is Sinners, the latest release by writer-director Ryan Coogler, this one about a pair of brothers, both played by Michael B. Jordan, who find themselves battling a different kind of classic supernatural horror. Let's begin by turning the clock back two decades. It was early on the morning of November 19, 2006, a little more than 3 years after the U.S. invaded Iraq, that a team of Navy SEALs took refuge in a house in Ramadi as part of what's known as the Second Battle of Ramadi. Their mission was to oversee an operation undertaken by a group of Marines, providing both on-the-ground intelligence and sniper cover. Unfortunately, they were discovered by the area's resistance fighters and soon found themselves fighting for their lives. Co-screenwriter and director Mendoza was one of the SEALs. He was, in fact, the communications link between his team and their off-site commanders. His experience, no doubt, can be credited for the authentic feel for everything we see, from the intense, anxiety-inducing minutes leading up to a gun battle that severely wounds two SEALs and takes the lives both of an Iraqi interpreter attached to the team and countless members of their heavily armed foes. The performances are powerful, especially by the Canadian actor DeFaro Wunatai as Mendoza, but they are secondary to the ongoing action. In the end, the movie pays tribute to their bravery, even as it avoids the larger question of what put everyone involved in harm's way in the first place.
So let's be clear, Warfare is not a war movie. Warfare is an anti-war movie, to my way of thinking. It thrusts us into the midst of this action involving these young men, some of whom have connections with one another. There's a new guy who's just trying to introduce himself into the group. And things happen fast and furious when the, quote, action starts. The problem is, with Warfare, we don't have enough context, even those of us who were sentient humans during this time period, to really understand all of the moving parts among, as Dan pointed out, the resistance, the SEALs who come in, you know, for this particular operation that are supposedly backing up Marines and so forth. This movie is a tough watch. I think it's just sort of unrelenting in its horror, and there are moments of dread where you're not sure what's going to happen next and so forth. But the performances by the individual actors, some of whom you'll recognize, I kept pointing out different people to Dan. I said, oh, there's Kit Connor from Heartstoppers, or there's Charles Melton, or so forth and so on. I mean, it felt real to me. I mean, almost too real in terms of the way that he's shooting this. Please keep in mind that Alex Garland also recently made another anti-war movie in Civil War. And so I think that he's kind of steeped in this culture of how do you bring out these political issues in a way that, you know, makes us stop to think, maybe why are people there? What's going on? Why are we doing this?
Well, and you could even argue that by stripping this movie of its sociopolitical and geopolitical context, which we can maybe talk more about, and he did that in Civil War as well, where he didn't really even explain which political faction was on which side of this, you know, imagined war that was happening, you could argue that maybe it can't be an anti-war movie if it's not really getting into all of the systemic and larger scale things that go into a war, especially the Iraq War. It's been interesting watching Alex Garland as a filmmaker because his earliest films behind the camera as director, so something like Ex Machina or Annihilation, were pretty cerebral and metaphorical. And I feel like in these last few movies, he has replaced his scalpel with a sledgehammer. For better or for worse, I've liked some of his later movies more than others. And I think Civil War, which I think is a better film than Warfare, in my opinion, it does strip this situation of all of its you know, historical and political context, which, again, isn't necessarily a bad thing, because you could argue that scrubbing the movie of discussions of, say, foreign policy is itself a political stance.
That's how I felt about it.
And it would certainly reflect the perspectives of the men who have been thrown into this scenario. They're just there to fulfill this mission, and that's really all they're focused on. And it doesn't really matter if they have to commandeer a house or take people hostage or kill innocent civilians. They're there for a mission. And you're right. This movie, Warfare, is visceral. I mean, the camera's right up in there on ripped flesh and shattered bones and
severed limbs. Make a point about the brutality that we see and the violence.
There's one scene in particular involving a character's shattered legs that are amongst the most, like, you feel it in your body. Mm. It's so intense. I am sort of left wondering at the end of this film, though, you know, after going through the horrors of war, and it's clearly meant to be, it feels sometimes like it's a first person POV kind of thing. I was sort of left wondering, what exactly do we have here that other war films haven't already done? I mean, the situation here is very similar to the one in Ridley Scott's Black Hawk Down. I think the opening of Saving Private Ryan is still a high watermark for this kind of visceral, on the ground, almost documentary style.
Well, see, and that's part of the problem here, because we've had some really intense documentary films about
that
war.
That too, yes.
Especially the war in Ukraine. And as a result, I think that, so do you have a fictional film that replicates that experience? And I think that is what they're trying to do here, obviously.
Yeah, and I think having Ray Mendoza behind the camera is an interesting wrinkle to this entire thing, because he's obviously able to say, this is how it happened. There's text at the beginning of Warfare that says, this is based only on these guys' memories, which I think is an interesting point. But I do think that, and this was a similar problem I had with Civil War, which is that Garland's deliberately apolitical approach kind of just makes this all about the filmmaking. It's all about the, I called it like a sledgehammer effect, and it moved me in the moment, but I was just thinking about other, I think, stronger war movies as I was leaving the theater, even though I thought that it was effectively made. And I agree with you about the cast. There's some really promising
actors. I don't know. When you say they're a stronger movie, as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the strongest war movies that I've ever seen. And I think that both of you are missing something here, because there is, in the context of the film, and I've seen it twice, there's a subtlety here. One, it gets almost overthrown, is the fact that the mission was screwed up from the very beginning. They go and take this house because it looks like a good house, but then they find out, oh my God, there's a wall between the two, and there's two families here. So they have to break down the wall. As soon as they break down the wall, they make so much noise that later on, when Will Poulter, the guy who's in charge, is asked,
Captain Eric,
why did you do that? Why didn't you blow it? He goes, I didn't want to make any noise. And they go, well, hell, we could hear it all the way over here. So immediately they screwed up. And then the second of all was another thing that get lost is the protocol. When the moment in which they're going, we need more Bradleys to come in. Oh, no, brigade has to give its okay for that. And then the one secondary officer who takes over from the Will Poulter character says, you pretend to be the CEO and give the okay. So it's priority over protocol. And so there are subtle things to this movie that aren't obvious. And I noticed them.
The other thing that struck me was, I mean, there was so much technical jargon, you know, stuff floating back and forth. And it did help you realize that you have to make these split second decisions, and you're getting only half the information, and you're expecting, you know, this cover to come in and help out, and then they're trying to protect themselves. And it really did show the messiness of some of these operations in a way that I hadn't fully appreciated from some other films.
Particularly with what is left over. The film ends with the soldiers being gone and the Iraqis who've been fighting them walking out in the street, and the family itself coming out going, what the hell happened to my house?
To me, there is
a political statement.
I was
right
going to say, that's the most pointed political point in the movie, is that it does leave us with the family. You know what I think left somewhat of a bad taste in my mouth? Because I'm coming more around to this movie as I hear you talk about it. I may have to see it again. Is the end credits footage, which I don't want to spoil. There were some things about it that made me think, why would you end it this way when you had such a perfect ending as you just described
it? Yeah, I thought
because
so too.
Because the way you described it isn't really the ending. There's more that happens after, and I was wondering
because
about
I think that was Mendoza's contribution.
I can't imagine Alex Garland making that choice if he were the only director.
Steven Spielberg, you know, that's the way he ends his movies too.
It's a little bit different from that, but I know what you're saying. So yeah, I think maybe I do need to watch this a second time, but there's no denying that Alex Garland, I mean, if he wants to make you feel violence deep in your gut, he's going to do it.
That's right. At any rate, that was our discussion of the movie Warfare. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Ryan Coogler's movie Sinners. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Peter Sagal here from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. If you're a member of this NPR station, thank you. It means a lot. Now, if you were looking for another way to help the station, you could, I don't know, call up all your friends and ask them to donate on your behalf repeatedly at all hours of the day and night until they just give in to get rid of you or block your number. Or you could just donate a vehicle you no longer need. It's up to you. Annoy your friends or free up space in your garage. Your choice.
Visit SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss the based-on-actual-events film Warfare. Let's now turn to something supernatural, a film by Black Panther director Ryan Coogler titled Sinners. Ryan Coogler first gained attention via his 2013 film Fruitvale Station, a based-on-real-events look at the death of a 22-year-old black man named Oscar Grant III, who was played by Michael B. Jordan. Coogler's biggest achievement to date, though, was his critically acclaimed 2018 contribution to the Marvel Studios franchise Black Panther, starring the late Chadwick Boseman. Now Coogler is reteamed with Jordan to give us Sinners, a study of black power in the face of 1932-era Southern racism, laced with a musical overlay of both classic blues and Irish folk music, all in support of what ultimately is a vampire tale. Featuring the talented Jordan playing two roles at once, twin brothers Smoke and Stack, who returned from Chicago intent on opening a juke joint in rural Mississippi, Coogler's film is full of his usual stylistic touches, though the actual content might leave some viewers scratching their collective heads as to what exactly he is trying to say.
Well, this year has been such a dead zone for grown-up movies on Hollywood budgets. It has actually kind of taken the wind out of my sails about just the art form of film in general, at least mainstream Hollywood filmmaking. And so a movie like Sinners gives me a little glimmer of hope because it's nice to have an expensive major studio release that's not only connecting with audiences, but actually gives you something to chew on after the movie is over. I saw it with a friend of mine and I said, as we were walking out of the theater, I said, I would be really curious to know if Ryan Coogler had to, say, give some kind of elevator pitch about what this movie is really about. I wonder what he would say.
Exactly.
But you make it sound like a negative, and I think that's a positive because mm-hmm. I like the fact that this movie, even though it is very entertaining, it's sort of a, you know, an upscale genre picture in a lot of ways. It doesn't overexplain itself. It doesn't make its intentions immediately obvious. And it has this gripping sense of style that I think all of Ryan Coogler's movies have had. And it's, of course, in this long tradition of black supernatural fiction and horror noir, as they call it. It's also playing into the lore of blues music, most notably Robert Johnson, the guitarist who died under mysterious circumstances and then was, you know,
at age 27.
Yes, and then was said to have, you know, sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads and mm-hmm. in exchange for fame that never came. And it is a movie about music and how music can shatter the borders of space and time. And the best scene in all of Sinners happens pretty much at the midway point. And it's when the juke joint that these two brothers are opening finally comes to life. And I don't want to spoil it because I think it is such a stunning sequence and not what I expected from this film at all. But let's just say that it echoes the themes of immortality that then come in as the vampire creatures that the movie's trailer shows. So it's not a spoiler, but the vampires don't come in to centers for a long time. And I think that's just the best part of this movie. And so I think it's using that sense of transformation of turning into a monster as a very complicated metaphor for racial assimilation, because it is, you know, 1930s yeah. Mississippi. So I thought there was a lot going on here. It kind of has a novelistic structure in a lot of ways, and it's got this huge, bustling cast of characters, and we get to see them for, you know, an hour and some change before the real action starts. We get to see who they are and what they believe and how they're related to one another. So I don't think this is a perfect movie by any means, but man, for a spring Warner Brothers release, like, what a surprise. So yeah, I think Sinners has a lot going for it. And this is another one that I would really like to see again, because I think once you know where it's going to end up, the beginning probably has a lot more things to offer.
I agree. I think this is worth a second watch, which we have not yet done. But the other thing about this film is, so Sinners has been characterized as a horror film or a vampire movie. And fortunately, it's not that.
It's not just that. I was under the impression that you didn't know there were vampires in it until the vampires showed up while you were sitting in the theater.
Well,
so somehow you were unspoiled by that.
I was.
See, that I'm jealous of that.
She turned to me and said, "Why didn't you tell me this was a vampire
movie?" That's amazing.
Movie?
I wish I could have gone.
I know, because like for some reason it was generating all this controversy. And so whenever that happens, I was like, oh, I hope they're not like, you know, going to diss this movie that I've been looking forward to seeing and so forth. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan, because this is not their first rodeo. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember Fruitvale Station,
which
was so compelling so many years ago. And then, you know, Creed. Black Panther. And I think that their ongoing collaboration is such that the subtleties between the two brothers, you know, he works that in such a way that Michael B. Jordan, the nuances of his performance are really notable in Sinners. I mean, you know, we know he's a great actor and I love watching him.
And isn't it amazing how inured we've become to CGI that allows Michael B. Jordan to be right next to each other
Seamless. Playing
two roles and you can't tell. It looks like two different people.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the other actor in this film that deserves a major shout out, Delroy Lindo.
National treasure.
Was
Delroy
great.
Lindo. Yeah.
And Jack O'Connell, who you'll recognize from other films. Because, you know, there's this whole, I mean, Nathan, you're right. Music is an integral part of what's going on here. But, you know, it's talking about class. It's talking about race. I mean, two of the proprietors of the little general store in town are Asian. And so that is another layer of sort of what's happening in this time period town.
You know, I can't take issue with anything that you guys are saying, but I think most people, most moviegoers are going to be going, wait a minute, now there's river dance in the middle of this movie? I mean,
That worked, I thought. This movie is doing amazingly well and is getting like great audience scores. So I think that people are taking away from it what maybe they will be confused. I don't know. I think if there is a problem with Sinners, it's the fact that when it does get to the vampire duel near the end of the movie, it's pretty standard stuff. We've seen it a million times before. I mean, it's the most obvious comparison is from Dusk Till Dawn, another movie that begins
Robert
as a vampire
Rodriguez,
movie
right? yeah.
and becomes a vampire movie. And of course, you know, Night of the Living Dead and all of its followers. But those movies, well, at least from Dusk Till Dawn, is a more straightforward kind of pulp genre exercise and much less concerned with the richness of character that I think Coogler brings to and the actors bring to all of these, you know, this ensemble that we get to watch.
Well,
I can't fault the acting at all, by the way.
Oh, God, it's great, yeah.
And the whole premise of these vampire movies that has always kind of escaped me despite The Hunger and, you know, some other films that we've seen.
You love Only Lovers Left Alive.
That's what I was going to say. That was coming next.
Which is also about music.
There's supposed to be this erotic thing happening with vampires always, you know, and that's the sort of backstory. And that doesn't really take center stage in this particular rendition.
The eroticism happens before the vampire.
Correct. Exactly. So I liked that about it.
Yeah.
But I think that this is the type of movie that does deserve a larger conversation among people who have seen it. Because there's so much going on, and it's all sort of thrown at you, and you have to figure out what happened in Chicago, who was involved, you know, who are these people, there's a death of a newborn, and, you know, how does that factor into the relationships among these people and so forth. But, yeah, I thought it took a big swing, and I thought it was successful.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to see the movie again to try to figure out how, I mean, I read in interviews why Coogler put the Irish components in the movie. And to him, there is a draw in black culture for Irish music, which is something I never knew. I had no idea of that. So I'd have to go back and take a look and see how it works for me, because it just threw me completely out of the film.
My feeling about that as I was watching it, you know, having not read those interviews as I was watching the movie, I thought, well, one, it's just kind of a strange, uncanny choice vampires come out of the woods and they're like a perfectly trained, you know, Irish folk.
Talented,
there's something
yeah.
like weirdly funny about that. But I was also thinking, like, well, the Irish were not treated well
America
absolutely. At that same time. And so there's a weird kind of kinship there that
well,
would make the vampires more,
right. It's
you know,
this hierarchy that's
yeah.
always existed, you know, in the U.S. at mm-hmm. least. And we're also ignoring the fact that there are some funny moments in this film.
Oh, yeah.
When the characters relate to one another, it just feels very authentic.
And I will say that there is a scene that's midway through the end credits of Sinners. And when I saw it, a bunch of people walked out because the credits started rolling and they left. And you need to sit there and wait.
Never do that.
Because
never do that.
This scene is incredibly important. I don't know why they decided to put it
right.
in there like it's a Marvel credit cookie. But it pulls all of these themes, at least for me, pulled a lot of them into focus. It changes our perception of a bunch of things that happened before.
And who is
so,
who. And
it's so integral to the movie. And it also features a legendary blues musician in a really interesting small performance. So stick around for the end credits.
Well, and also we didn't talk about the sort of religious overlay and the significance of, you know, sort of religion and music to the black experience during this time. And I thought they handled that well. Too.
And I think what we're saying here is that there's a lot going on in this
there's
movie.
There's a lot going on.
On.
Yeah. At any rate, that was our discussion of Ryan Coogler's film Sinners. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender and Pat Truthart and I discussed the film Warfare. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the Nobel Prize-winning novelist John Steinbeck. All war is a symptom of man's failure as a thinking animal. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.